Hey there, it's Gary Parrish. It's Sunday, January 15th. Welcome back to the Ion College Basketball Podcast. Got Matt Norlander with me. It was a busy Saturday in college basketball. Gonzaga killed St. Mary's last night. Butler gave Xavier another L. Notre Dame moved to 5-0 in the ACC with a win over Virginia Tech at Virginia Tech. TCU made my Friday column look good by beating Iowa State, then jumping into the CBS Sports Top 25-1. We're going to get to most, if not all, of that. But I wanted to start with what I think was the biggest story from the weekend, if only because everything related to Duke tends to be the biggest story from any weekend. The Blue Devils lost again, this time at Louisville. So now they're 2-3 in the ACC. Now, on one hand, the last two losses, the ones that came last week, are nothing more than losses at Florida State and at Louisville. Basically, everybody in the country would have been expected to lose those two games, and I know that's a point you made in your column. On the other hand, Duke is 2-3 in the ACC for the first time this century, and injured and without its Hall of Fame coach. So where are you with the Blue Devils now? Where should we be with the Blue Devils right now?
I'm sure a lot of people listening, GP, are ready to say that Duke's not a top 10 team and thinking that we overrated Duke and that the Blue Devils have little business being considered among the three or four most likely teams to win a national title. But I'm not there yet, at all, because as you said on Friday's podcast, when you almost on the nose predicted the outcome of Louisville Duke in terms of a score, Duke was not playing at home, did not have its Hall of Fame coach, and was going up against a team with a Hall of Fame coach. So they had a lot of elements, and by the way, didn't have a starter in Emil Jefferson. So when you realize that Duke didn't have its most pivotal defensive player, which is Jefferson, and Matt Jones, really, really good defensive player, but Jefferson is obviously the guy they need most, especially down low. Not having him, not having Krzyzewski, in the fact that they went on the road, played against the Florida State team, that I'll be interested to see what happens with them in the polls. Real quick, GP, where do you have Florida State in your top 25-1? Because they beat Duke at home, and then they lose in a competitive game with, what, a 9-point spread at the end at Carolina. So where do you have FSU right now?
I think I've got them 12th right now, but they could easily be. Like, I spent way too much time on the top 25-1. So anybody who is ever critical, like when I write the Politex column, it is usually aimed at somebody who quite clearly took no time to actually think about what they're doing. I believe I never go after something that is just subjective. It's usually something that by the time I'm finished explaining why I think it's ridiculous, even the person whose ballot I'm attacking can't do anything except shrug their shoulders and say, yeah, you're probably right. That tends to be the way those columns go. So my point is, listen, anytime you rank anything, people are going to critique it. But don't ever think I'm not tearing through resumes and computer formulas and box scores and everything, because I am. And my the thing is, and this is sort of what I wrote about this morning, you could reasonably have four different teams ranked number one in the country right now. You could make the case for Villanova. That's who I have, and it's easy. You could make the case for UCLA. It's easy. You could make the case for Kansas. It's easy. And you could make the case for Gonzaga just by pointing at the undefeated record. Sort of the same thing you run into right around 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18. Like, you could put those teams in basically any order. There's not much difference in their resumes, in their computer numbers, in any of the stuff that I tend to look at. So I've got Florida State 12. And that's because I needed to get North Carolina up, and I wanted to have them behind North Carolina after what happened yesterday. But you could reasonably rank Florida State in the top 9. You could reasonably have them, you know, 15 or so. They've got a great resume, and that's a hell of a week for them. To split those two games, a good week.
Yeah, it's a good week. To me, Louisville and Florida State are unequivocally top 15 teams at worst, and if you wanted to make top 10 arguments for both, you actually could, given what Louisville's done and the wins it's gotten against ranked teams and what Florida State's done and the wins it has and the fact that it lost against Carolina in a road environment after beating three straight ranked teams. So I'm not ready to sell on Duke. Don't have Krzyzewski, don't have Jefferson yet. Now they get a full week to rest before they get a home game. So if you want to say this team is overrated and the fact that they're 2-3 for the first time in eons in the ACC play, I get that. They've actually had, you know, some stumbles in recent years. They were never below 500 through five games at the exact five-game mark. So this is a little bit aberrational, obviously. And then also, you know, Grayson Allen got tied up with Donovan Mitchell, whatever. He can't go one game without having something. It's simply ridiculous. He cannot play one 40-minute game, GP, without something happening. And this time he was on the wrong end of it because Mitchell got him in the face. But aside from all that crap, he was the most important player on the floor for Duke yesterday. He had a relatively good game all around. He is the default point guard now. And so it was good for Duke to get that because they were booing every time he had the ball. You know, he's aware of what's going on. He spoke afterward about it. He hears it, tries not to think about it. He still played relatively well against, hello, a really terrific backcourt. Louisville's one of the best defensive teams in the country. So to me, once you add Jefferson back into the mix, and I'm assuming you're going to get some better play from Harry Giles, who played the most minutes he's ever played in a game. Granted, he's like seven games deep into his college career, but he's getting more conditioning, getting more in. He's not as awesome right now as I thought he would be. He's not even really good. You could say he's not even good at this point. But Jefferson comes back. Giles is able to play 30 competent minutes. If Allen's able to do this, and oh, by the way, Luke Kennard is still a top 10 player of the year candidate. If you want to even put him top six or seven, I still think that's legitimate. That's why I'm not concerned yet about Duke. And if we assembled a bracket today or tomorrow, I wouldn't take Duke to win it all if they didn't have Jefferson, but if you give me a fully healthy Duke team, they would be in my top four, you know, teams I would most strongly consider to win the title, even with what they've done over the past week and a half.
That's the thing. Like, I've got Duke ranked 15th right now, which might actually be low, except the perception of it is that it's too high. Like, I can't tell you how many replies I got on Twitter from, hey, good job not making sure you drop Duke too far. You know, people think that because Duke is always in the top 15, that somehow there's like a Duke bias that exists, and it's just like you got to keep Duke ranked in the top 15 no matter what. The truth is Duke is always a top 15 team. Like that, like, you know, like you look at all the computer numbers, all of the anything, Duke is always good. That's why Duke is always ranked. And while this team is obviously not operating the way a lot of us thought it would operate in the preseason, they're still good. They're still really good by any measuring stick. They're just not as good as we thought they were going to be. And Jesus, they haven't been healthy like a minute of the season, not to the extent that they wanted to be or thought they would be. You know, at first it was, and we've been through all of this, Harry Giles, Marquise Bull, then Jason Tatum in street clothes to start the season. Then they come back, but even Giles isn't healthy yet, and that was obvious again yesterday. And even if he is healthy, he's just not. He's not a good basketball player right now. Like, you pick whatever it is. I'm sure one has something to do with the other. But he's not anything close to what they hoped he would be in what is presumably his only year of college. Bolden isn't, like, can't get on the court. So that's, like, you can't get on the court when Emile Jefferson in on the rotation. Like, that's not a good thing. So Bolden's not what they thought he'd be. Giles is still recovering. Jefferson's hurt. Grayson was suspended. They've just been through a lot of stuff, and they're still okay. Not where they wanted to be, but still okay. And so I'm not as confident in them as I was in October, but I'm with you. Like, if you tell me Duke is going to be healthy when the NCAA tournament starts, and you give me a handful of teams, like give me four picks, they'll definitely be in my top four, and they might end up being my number one.
Yeah, I agree. And quick note on Bolden. I tweeted this out, but he was in the Draft Express top 15 in the preseason. He's no longer in the mock draft for 2017. And for 2018, which is not as strong of a year as 2017, he's, you know, right now, Jonathan Givony does a really good job. He's one of a small group of people that does their homework and knows what they're talking about. Bolden's like barely cracking the top 20. So, yeah, that's been a little bit of a mystery there, how he's not been able to adapt whatsoever. And, you know, that's, I don't know if it's problematic for Duke, but he was certainly expected to be someone that would contribute, and that's not even happening, and it was glaring, specifically not having him being able to help in any real tangible way in the Louisville game.
Really quickly on Louisville, and I tweeted this earlier, because they've got right now the second best defensive efficiency rating in the country, and they have never been outside of the top five, I think, for like seven straight years. 2011, they finished fifth defensive efficiency. 2012, first. 2013, first. 2014, fifth. 2015 fifth, 2016 second, and right now they're second. So you're talking about, you know, Rick Pitino, and I've written about this before. This isn't anything new, but we're watching one of the great defensive college basketball coaches of all time, because with the amount of turnover you have in college basketball, if your teams are consistently top five defensive efficiency rating, that's because of the coach. That's not because of anything other than the guy in charge of teaching these young players how to play. So that's a really impressive string of unbelievably gifted defensive basketball teams. And I wonder, you know, listen, that defense is going to, obviously it can put them in a position to beat anybody because they've beaten some really good teams. But like, history says you've got to be better offensively than Louisville is to win a national championship. It's very difficult to win it with the offensive efficiency rating they have, even if the defensive efficiency rating is top shelf. So it'll be interesting to see whether they get that sorted out, or at the very least just get it in a better position going forward, because you've ultimately, and I think especially in this season where everybody's scoring, you're gonna need to score and outscore somebody on your way to a national championship. Let me tell you about SeatGeek real quick. Buying tickets online for sports and concerts has been a confusing process for a long, long time. It's always been hard to find the best deal for that game or for that concert or show that you want to attend. None of the older ticket sites have really been aggressive about trying to make it less confusing, but SeatGeek is different. They've created an amazing app and website, and they've made it easier than ever for people like you and I to buy and sell tickets. It's always the first place I go when I'm going to buy a ticket to a game or a concert. It is the place you should go. It's the place Norlander goes, and you should use the College BB promo code. That's College BB, and you'll get a $20 rebate off your first SeatGeek purchase. So here's the way it's going to work. You're going to download the SeatGeek app. Then you're going to purchase the tickets to whatever you want to go to. Then you're going to use the promo code COLLEGEBB, and SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. Very simple. Again, the promo code is COLLEGEBB. That's COLLEGEBB. SeatGeek. Millions of tickets in one place. So I was handling sideline duty yesterday for the Memphis-South Florida game at FedEx Forum, but I got home in time to settle in for St. Mary's and Gonzaga, and I think you and I were both on the same page. That was the game we were most looking forward to, and while it was not a competitive game, certainly not in the second half, it was an incredibly impressive performance by the Zags, maybe the most impressive performance by anybody this entire weekend, because they absolutely hammered a legitimate top 25 team, remained undefeated, and now I think it's reasonable to wonder whether they're going to enter Selection Sunday with zero losses. And I, you know, because it is still statistically improbable, but it's not impossible. They've got like a 33% chance, according to KenPom right now, to enter the WCC tournament with a perfect record. And if they do that, they'll obviously be favored on a neutral court against any WCC team they have to play, St. Mary's included. So do you think Gonzaga is going to be zero losses on Selection Sunday?
I don't. I don't outright explicitly root for Gonzaga, although that few and his coaching staff, good guys there, and it's good for college basketball if it happens. So I root for the story. So if Gonzaga can get to Selection Sunday without a loss, that's just, you know, it's a talking point and something that will bring more attention to the sport. And Gonzaga is, you know, they're a fun team, and so I root for that. I don't think it'll happen. I did put it on Twitter. I tossed up a poll. I'm approaching 800 votes here. 73% of people, I said over under 1.5 losses, because they still have road games at St. Mary's, at BYU. Those are the two toughest. And then, you know, maybe you get one of those two teams in the WCC final. Who knows what happens in one game when one team might, you know, desperately need it for seeding purposes, or BYU would need it probably to get the auto bid. So to me, the absolute, like, worst case scenario for Gonzaga is three losses. Losing at St. Mary's, losing at BYU, and getting plucked.
That ain't happening. They ain't losing three times.
I know it's not happening. I'm saying the worst case, okay?
Yeah, like if Nigel Williams-Goss, like, has a car wreck and breaks his leg.
Right, so right now we've hit a point here where – what's the percentage right now for Gonzaga undefeated on KenPom?
I want to say it was 33.7, but let me double-check for you.
I'd love to know – what's more likely at this point? 3 losses for Gonzaga or 0 losses for Gonzaga? Because if I had to choose between the two,
I would go zero,
which is obviously kind of nuts, but it speaks to the league. It also speaks to how good this team is. St. Mary's got some issues. Jock Landale got into some foul trouble, but Gonzaga just had it figured out at home. They played well. I don't think that much less of St. Mary's, and I still think St. Mary's will be up and ready and will have a good chance at beating Gonzaga when they have that game on their home floor in February. But yeah, if you want to say because of the way Gonzaga won, GP, let's just start entertaining this idea because of how good Gonzaga looks, I'm ready to do that. And this is, by the way, the best start in program history. Fuse had some good teams over the years, never had a team that started this well. And it's impressive because he's doing it with veterans, yes, but he's doing it with guys that are transfers that weren't initially his recruits. You've got guys like, you know, Jordan Matthews, who's a grad transfer. You know, he did not even sit out a year like Nigel Williams-Goss did. So to do it like this, it's getting interesting. I do think they're going to take at least one loss before Selection Sunday, but I'll tag it with this. I remain steadfast, and if Gonzaga is undefeated, they're going to be a one seed. It's not even going to be on the table. In fact, they'll probably be the number one overall seed if they're undefeated, I would think, as long as everyone else has at least 2 losses. If they have 1 loss, I still would not entertain them not being a one seed. 2 losses, we'll see. We'll play it out from there. But they are tracking to be a one seed, and it will be interesting to see. And we'll talk about this more in February when we've got more to look at. But if UCLA can, if it stays on its path and Gonzaga stays on its path, both teams would have a right to a number one seed, but one team would not get that one out west. So something just to kind of track forward as we move on.
You mentioned UCLA. They just completed the toughest 2-game road trip they're going to have all season, and they won both games. At Colorado and at Utah is the toughest road trip any Pac-12 team has to take outside of at USC and at UCLA. And they obviously don't have to do that one because they are UCLA. So it doesn't mean that they're going to run away with the Pac-12. Hell, they're not even in first place in the Pac-12 right now. But they've got their toughest 2-game stretch behind them. And I don't want to say they handled it with ease because like the yesterday's game at Utah came down to the final seconds. But they won both games, and they were brilliant offensively. Undeniably Thursday night, like they set a record with 19 three-pointers. But then yesterday, they scored enough to win, which is what I think they're going to do way more often than not in the season, just score enough to win. With Gonzaga, to your point, I think Gonzaga and UCLA are both going to be in the one-seed conversation, and that will that'll be a fascinating debate inside that committee room. Like, what do you do with these teams? Because you might end up having to, you know, how do you balance let's say UCLA does get there with like 3 losses and Gonzaga gets there with 1, right? Selection Sunday, that's where we're sitting. How do you compare those resumes? Because I don't think it'll be clear the 1-loss team has got the better resume than the 3-loss team, given that the 3-loss team could end up being a UCLA team that, you know, loses at Oregon at the buzzer, let's say at Arizona.
And the team Gonzaga defeated, but granted, it wasn't a road game.
Right. And then, you know, at somewhere else or in the Pac-12 tournament. I just think it'll be interesting. And I'm glad you mentioned that, because when I wrote about Gonzaga last night and I tweeted it this morning, I was so tired. I couldn't even wait for it to publish. I sent it in and just went to sleep. I was like, I'll deal with this in the morning. So I got up early this morning and tweeted a link to just some thoughts about Gonzaga's win over St. Mary's. And immediately it's like, oh, yeah, well, like, it's easy to go undefeated when you don't play anybody. First off, if it were easy to go undefeated, somebody would do it every year. All right? It's very difficult to go to Selection Sunday with an unblemished record. I won't pretend that it can't be easier if you're a really good MBC team or a really good WCC team, like Wichita State was a few years ago and like Gonzaga is now. Obviously, close to impossible to do it if you're an ACC team. Maybe impossible to do it if you're a Big 12 team. I know nothing's impossible, but you get my point. So I got it. Like, I understand they play in a WCC schedule instead of the ACC schedule. But don't pretend for a second that they haven't beaten anybody on the way to this 17-0 record. They've got a win over a Florida team that I think is clearly the second best team in the SEC. They've got a win over an Iowa State team that is still a top 30 team in America. They've got to win over an Arizona team that's only lost, I think, twice all season and is top 20 at KenPom. And then they've got that dominant win over St. Mary's team that is, you know, still top 20 at KenPom. So they've got 1, 2, 3, 4, I believe, yeah, 4 top 25 KenPom wins and 0 losses. They're ranked 3rd at KenPom. That's an unbiased statistical formula. So there's not, this isn't something where, you know, some team played nobody out of the league and now is playing nobody in their league and they're undefeated. So what? Gonzaga's got four high level wins under its belt already. And that's why, you know, I know our buddy Rob Doster tweeted earlier, like, if Gonzaga's undefeated, there's going to be a debate about whether they should get a one seed. There is not going to be a debate at all. For the reason you said, every time you get a, yeah. Oh, I mean, it'll be a dumb debate. I mean, I guess if you want to debate dumb stuff, you can, like climate change. Like, I guess there's a debate about that among some people, but like, whatever. But like, Gonzaga with 4 top 25 KenPom wins and an undefeated record, that's a one seed, easy. Like, that'll be the least debated thing in, by the selection committee. So this is something that Gonzaga has dealt with before and will deal with until they break through and get to the Final Four. And on some level, that's fair. You know, I guess if when people start talking about them as a Final Four team, it is fair for somebody to point out, guys, we've been having this conversation for 15 years. It never happens. I guess it's fair if only because it's true. But it is why I do on some level root for Gonzaga to finally break through, if only because we never have to defend what is, you know, basically a Hall of Fame career Mark Few is putting together. And one of the consistently really good programs in America. You shouldn't have to defend a 17-0 record with a program as established as this program, but you do, and part of it's because they've never broken through and gotten to that Final Four before.
Yeah, and if you're interested on when those two games that Gonzaga would be most vulnerable for losses, they play at BYU on February 2nd. It is a tough place to play. BYU tends to do well there. It's a kind whistle. And February 11th at St. Mary's is the other one. Don't see them. They've got other road games, but I just don't see them losing. And BYU, by the way, took a bad loss, relatively speaking. They lost at San Diego, which is not a good team, over the weekend. So BYU's at-large hopes are officially dead with that loss, in my opinion. But yeah, man, Gonzaga's going to be they'll be an interesting story. And I'll have something up later this week. Early this week on Gonzaga going undefeated, this point being the last undefeated, and how they compare with other teams in the past.
So Xavier fans have thought that I had them underrated or ranked too low in recent weeks, really going back to when they lost back-to-back games to Baylor and Colorado. And my sort of explanation has always been, nobody likes Chris Mack more than I like Chris Mack, but this basketball team hasn't been good. And now they've taken two more losses, and while they were at Villanova and at Butler, so that's a little bit like Duke losing at Florida State and at Louisville. Like, what are you going to do? Those are scheduled losses. The truth is, they still don't look good, and they don't have much in terms of quality wins. They've beaten Wake Forest, they've beaten Clemson, they've beaten Utah. One of those games was on a neutral; the other two were at home. Outside, you know, they won at Georgetown. I guess you can be happy about that, but like, there ain't much there.
There's not, and I bursted out a quick column on this because I thought it was time to do this, because also they've got a quick turnaround. They host Creighton Monday afternoon, not even Monday night, so they've got less than a 48-hour turnaround before they got to play the Blue Jays, who, by the way, you know, they're going to need to win the Big East to have a right to a number one seed. But that's another team. I don't think people realize how awesome Creighton is. That's not going to be easy for Xavier. Creighton 17-1, and they're going into Cincinnati. To me right now, Clemson, no, not a surefire tournament team. Utah, they're good, but they're not a surefire tournament team. Wake Forest, the metrics like them, but I've seen them play. To me, that's not a tournament team this year, probably a year away. And those are their best wins. And then at Georgetown, not a tournament team at this point. Now, could some of those teams get into the dance? Obviously they could, but let's just sit and evaluate where we are right now, what teams have done and what they look like. Right now, Xavier does not have a win over an NCAA tournament team that's projected to get there at this point. So that's some reason for concern. And I also, in my preview for the weekend, I wrote, you know, this is oddly kind of a good thing for the Big East, because Xavier has, and I'll be interested to see if they're ranked in the polls on Monday, because both losses are reasonable, but they are two losses. So if they drop out, they were 15th, I would expect that to happen, but maybe they just cling on. But they've been ranked for more than a year. And I wrote that they kind of have coasted on name and school brand. And by the way, you know, those are things that definitely can happen. People that want to criticize, you know, Duke for consistently being a top 15 team, I think that, you know, those things can also sometimes be at play. But it's good for the Big East that that this is a case where you've got schools that are not named Villanova that might be benefiting just, you know, purely by their name, because Xavier gets to the tournament almost every damn year. It's a nationally relevant program. I would qualify it as a top 30 program in America. But now's the time where we need to realize what they haven't done. Yes, 13-4 record is solid, I guess, but the wins just aren't quite there yet. And big opportunity against Creighton. You lose that game, man, they got to play at Cincinnati. Huge rivalry game on the road on January 26th. And St. John's isn't a good team, but St. John's has randomly pulled some stuff out. It gets really hairy for Xavier, who I think will get into the tournament with plenty of room to spare. But it felt time to discuss a little bit of what they haven't yet done. And I think they can get there, but I want to see them be better. I still believe, I remember talking, a couple weeks ago, GP, on the podcast, I still think this team can be good. And I tagged my column with, ironically, maybe they end up being some sort of weird under-the-radar sleeper-type team, which is actually when they've been best in the tournament. It hasn't been when they've been highly seeded. When they've made good second-weekend runs, it's because they've either been something of a sleeper pick or maybe a little bit of a chic upset pick. Maybe oddly Xavier becomes that. Or this was, you know, two tough road games against two really good teams. Butler's resume is awesome. We're just, you know, we're at the halfway point of the season. We turn it on 3 weeks from now. We see that Xavier's racked up good wins over Creighton. They steal one at Cincinnati, and, you know, Villanova came to its home floor mid-February. They got a win there and they're fine. But in the here and now, you know, if you're Xavier, you've got a little bit of concern. The team should be better than what it is.
Yes. And the good news is they've got an opportunity to, you know, if the critique of them is, yo, who have you beaten? It's January 15th. Your best win's Clemson? Like, what, you know, if that's the issue with Xavier, well, then here's the good news. They got an opportunity to eliminate that question on Monday afternoon, like you said, because they've got Creighton in their building. And while I agree with you, Creighton is Final Four good because they're terrific offensively. You know, they're sitting here as a one-loss team, middle of January. The lone loss is a loss to the team I think should be ranked number one in the country, and that's Villanova. As good as Creighton is and has been, if you're a legitimate top 20 team, which Xavier fans would say that they are, I think, or at least they would have a week ago, you got to knock this one out. Like, this is the game you got to get. Like, you got to lose it on the road. I don't think I dropped Xavier at all for the loss at Butler. Lose close games on the road to higher ranked teams, I'm not going to penalize you for that, but you got to win your home games. And so this is a big opportunity on Monday afternoon. Notre Dame, 5-0 in the ACC. Raise your hand if you saw this coming.
No one is raising their hand to that, because, oh man, Mike Bray, he's just awesome. I don't know how this is being done. I think I'm going to write about Notre Dame this week, because now they got the road game against Florida State coming up on Wednesday. So that'll be,
right,
you know, it's two different kind of styles, two different kind of teams. That'll be a tough game. And no shame whatsoever if Notre Dame drops that, because no one thought, you know, it's right now on top of the ACC. The ACC standings are so weird right now to a certain extent, because Notre Dame's the only unbeaten team left in league play. You got Duke below 500. NC State, who I thought would be top four in the conference, is sitting at 1-3. Notre Dame just continues to be really, really good. They got a win against Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech, as a quick side note, is 1-3 since it beat Duke when Duke didn't have Grayson Allen. Just keep an eye on the Hokies. They were feeling like a nice tournament team. They still might be that, but let's see what they do going forward here. They haven't been too good over the past couple of weeks. Notre Dame has defeated Pittsburgh on the road in OT, and that was an entertaining and close game. They won by one. They took out Louisville in South Bend. They took out Clemson in South Bend. They got a win over Miami and then a win over Virginia Tech in a span of just 2 days, on Thursday and then Saturday. So hugely impressive to start.
Span of 3 days in Orlando.
And, yeah, 3 days, but yeah, I get what you're saying. Two games in 3 days. And then, yeah, man, Bonzi Colson's been awesome. Matt Farrell made a huge, huge play on Saturday. Steve Astoria continues. I mean, Astoria hit a big shot near the end of that game against Virginia Tech that kind of sealed it. He's become like, you know, their big shot guy. Hard not to like what Notre Dame is. And their only losses, both on neutral courts, to Villanova and a Purdue team that will challenge Wisconsin and maybe Michigan State to be the champs of the Big Ten.
No, it's been awesome. And like, it doesn't register, I don't guess, you know, going out and winning at Miami and at Virginia Tech in a 3-day span, because I think Miami at the time is unranked and Virginia Tech at the time is unranked. But like, that's a hell of a 2-game road trip to get. I mean, you go win at those places. Go look at how often. I think Miami's loss to Notre Dame at home the other night was their first loss at home since Northeastern beat them last year in the non-league schedule. So, like, I think that's true. Like, I don't believe an ACC school won at Miami at all last year. Let me make sure that's right before I just start making things up. That is true. An ACC school did not win a game at Miami last year. And so for Notre Dame to go in and win in that place is incredibly impressive. And then to back it with a win at Virginia Tech, it is a testament to the culture and program that Mike Bray has built, because he has turned into, you know, one of the consistently really good coaches in America. And what I mean by that is he's turned into a coach who's responsible for one of the consistently really good programs in America. Like, it doesn't matter who they lose, doesn't matter who they bring in. They can lose a first team All-American, they're still fine. Back-to-back Elite Eights past 2 years, and they're now on their way to their seventh straight NCAA tournament. Like, just, you know, don't ever take that for granted. You know, I mean, we'll get to this in a moment, but Pitt fans started taking for granted just going to NCAA tournaments. Because, like, okay, we go every year, but then what? We don't go to the Final Four, so what's the point? Do not ever take going to, you know, obviously, if you're Kentucky, if you're Duke, if you're Carolina.
There's like 10 to 12 programs. And
I don't even think it's that many. I don't even think it's that many. Like Louisville. Like, just don't ever take going to the NCAA tournament every year for granted, because it ain't easy to do. And it is an accomplishment. And Mike is now about to do it for the seventh straight year. It reminds me a little bit, I think, obviously, the NCAA tournament finishes have been a little bit better than the other program I'm going to mention. But Mick Cronin has turned Cincinnati into like a consistently good program regardless of the parts. Doesn't matter who he loses. Doesn't matter who he brings in. They're going to be borderline top 25 and in the NCAA tournament. I think Mick's about to go for the sixth or seventh straight year.
Yeah.
Mike's about
he's
to
been
go.
Really good. Xavier in that city.
Xavier
has been like
is right.
Past 12.
Like, like, just don't ever take that for granted. I used to tell Memphis fans this all the time. Like, Josh Pastner was getting booed and going to four straight NCAA tournaments. And I'm not trying to defend the last 2 years, but my point was, like, this doesn't, you know, going to four straight NCAA tournaments, you know, at a place like Memphis isn't something that should be taken for granted. And I hope Notre Dame fans, Cincinnati fans appreciate that. Because they've got guys who are running their programs at a high level, maybe not going out and getting McDonald's All-Americans and one-and-done guys and being ranked top five in the country consistently. But, and you know, if the goal at a place like those places is to have a consistently relevant and good college basketball program, Mike at Notre Dame and Mick at Cincinnati have absolutely they've developed that, and they've maintained it for a significant period of time now.
And Mike, he has – so Krzyzewski doesn't like to coach against his former assistants, so he tries to avoid it whenever he can. But now he can't do it with Bray because they're in the same conference. And Notre Dame switched from the Big East to the ACC. And it's something like five of the past six times Notre Dame has played Duke, Notre Dame has won. I mean, he and if you look at what Duke's done basically against all other ACC opponents over that span, no one has a – winning rate over the past four seasons against Duke like Notre Dame. It's pretty amazing what he's been able to do, even when you look at it, you know, on a micro level when it comes to that. But yeah, Notre Dame, listen, tracking toward a number three seed, if it continues to romp in the ACC, you know, obviously a two or a number one will be on the table. Let's just see a little bit more of what they can do, but certainly turning into one of the really good stories so far this season. I'm sure some people don't fully buy in yet because, you know, they don't know who Bonzi Colson is. They don't know who Steve Astoria is or Matt Farrell. That doesn't matter. Every single year, I mean, they've lost guys who have turned themselves into a nice developmental culture there. So don't write off Notre Dame because they don't necessarily have a superstar or whatever like that. They're legit, and they are almost definitely going to be a top four team in the standings at the end of the year in what is a loaded ACC. And by the way, top four is worst case scenario. I would think now they're a near lock to be top three.
And that's the other thing about college basketball. It obviously helps to have Lonzo Ball or De'Aaron Fox or one and done players like that, but or like a Devin Downey. Shout out to Devin Downey. But you don't have to have college superstars like De'Aaron Fox and Lonzo Ball and Devin Downey to be able to operate at a high level. And perhaps that's what's happening at Notre Dame right now. Last thing before we get out of here, TCU is now sitting at 14-3 after Saturday's win over Iowa State. They beat Iowa State 84-77. A great crowd in a renovated arena. Jamie Dixon, obviously in his first year at TCU. He was the first coach ever to start his tenure 8-0 at TCU. He's got a team that's ranked top 35 at KenPom right now. I've got them in the top 25 1-1 at CBSSports.com. And I wrote a column on Friday basically explaining, because it's something it's something I've written before just in general or said in before in general. And I 100% believe it to be true. There are exceptions to this. But for the most part, if you are a Power 5 program who is willing to invest in men's basketball in all of the ways that you need to invest in men's basketball, and then you hire the right coach and give him the resources to hire the right staff, you can be good. I don't know that that's true in football. Like, I think there are some Power 5 football programs that it just really doesn't matter. You're going to be what you're going to be. But in college basketball, you can break through if you get the right guy. And TCU, once it got into the Big 12 and it got Big 12 money, it decided, let's get good at men's basketball. And they, I think, threw $77 million at their arena. But then they also invested in all of the other ways you have to invest to convince Jamie Dixon to leave Pitt and come take over at his alma mater. Now, they had a couple of windows that were open for them that otherwise that allowed them to get the, quote, right coach for their job. One is Jamie's a TCU alum. But the truth is, like, if TCU wouldn't have really invested, Jamie wouldn't have gone back to his alma mater to be a bottom-tier Big 12 program. So they had to throw money at it, and then that's how they could get the attention of one of their alums. And the other thing is, like, Pitt fans had stopped appreciating, Jamie having a consistent winner. I think sometimes this gets lost because even Pitt fans were tweeting me, Jamie left on his own. We didn't push him out. The Pitt administration actually lowered his buyout to allow him to go. They made it easier for him to go. If they wanted to keep him, you know what you do? You say, we're not changing your buyout. If you're leaving, you got to pay every penny of it. But beyond that, we don't want you to leave. Here's a raise. They didn't offer a raise, and they lowered his buyout. They pushed him out the door. And I don't know. Like, I like Kevin Stallings a lot, but I can't imagine he's going to go to the NCAA tournament nearly as often as Jamie Dixon went to the NCAA tournament. I imagine Pitt fans someday will wonder, whoa, we had it pretty good. Why didn't we appreciate it and enjoy it a little bit more? But either way, because they didn't, combined with the fact that TCU was willing to invest, they got the right guy, and they've done all the right things. And now they're sitting here with 1, 2, 3, 4 top 100 wins, 2 top 50 wins, including a win over the Illinois State team that beat Wichita State pretty convincingly Saturday night. And like I said, I don't know if they'll be ranked in the AP poll on Monday, but I do have them ranked in the top 25 and 1. And I had some people say, hey, don't get too excited. Remember, this is TCU was started the season 13-0 a couple years ago, which is true. But in that year, it was 13-0 with zero top 100, maybe one 100 top, I think it was one top 150 win. They beat nobody. It was a bunch of 300s and 200 level teams. This TCU team has beaten real opponents. Illinois State, beaten Oklahoma, beaten Texas. By the way, Texas just played West Virginia to the buzzer. Beaten Iowa State. And so I don't know where it goes from here. But TCU is going to be good at men's basketball going forward. And the reason is because they decided to invest and they decided to hire the right coach. And they were able to hire the right coach because they decided to invest. And that should be a lesson to every other Power 5 program. If you want to be good, you can be. You just have to do those two things. Invest like crazy and go get the right guy.
Yeah, I got two quick hits non-TCU related before we wrap up, GP. But my response to that is it's paying immediate dividends. They're looking strong. They're looking like they will contend for a tournament bid this year. Let's see what else they can do on the road in league play. And at the very worst, TCU is going to be a factor in the league, in the Big 12. And I don't expect Dixon to have the same amount of consistent success at TCU that he had at Pittsburgh. But it's going to be such an uptick from what the program was that, yeah, I think as long as he's there, and unless TCU gets amazing and then Dixon gets a job opportunity at like a big time job, maybe, you know, there's just enough success, but just enough failure where this is the job that Jamie Dixon retires at and he's there for another 15 years. And in that 15 year span, TCU goes to 8 NCAA tournaments, which would be just monumental for that program.
Monumental, but I think also a realistic goal.
Yeah, no, it is. Interested to see what they can do on the recruiting trail, but it's paying.
Already got right now they have just for context, they have a top 30 recruiting class signed, and it's the third best in the Big 12. That's what they just did in November.
It's been rolling. So keep an eye on them. I don't know if they'll get to the tournament this year, but they might. They might. They're going to have to win at home and probably steal a couple on the road. But you're right. It's certainly something to take notice of, because when you take a job like that, it would have been acceptable and understandable if it took Dixon until his third year to get it going.
Sure.
They seem to get it going right off the bat, and we'll see what happens. GP, two quickies for you here, okay? Mm-hmm. And we'll wrap up. One, I feel that we should mention this because it is now history. UConn women have now won 91 straight games, breaking their own record. Three of the four longest win streaks in Division I basketball history actually belong to the UConn women, the other one being obviously UCLA in the Wooden days. So I wanted to acknowledge that. We don't have to get into a whole is it good or bad for women's basketball, but I thought it was worth mentioning because that did happen with a win over SMU over the weekend. And it is remarkable to me that – Gino, it's not just one team or one recruiting class. This has happened with separate groups, separate players in separate eras. He's had three of the four longest win streaks ever in Division One. It's amazing to me, and there's something fascinating about the fact that he has just continued to stay there despite having opportunities elsewhere to coach. Did you have just a kind of a quick take? If not, I just wanted to kind of hit you with that because it was, you know, within college basketball,
no,
it was something that was, you know.
Gino has done at UConn, yeah, what Gino's done at UConn is as impressive, if not more impressive, than what John Wooden did at UCLA. He should be thought of as one of the greatest basketball coaches who has ever lived, period. I don't mean women's basketball coaches. I don't mean, New England basketball coaches. I don't mean American Athletic Conference, but he's one of the greatest coaches of the sport of basketball to ever live. Undeniably, one of the most accomplished. I guess you could debate best if you wanted to. That's subjective, but he's undeniably one of the most accomplished, if not the most accomplished. And so, it's amazing. I know people discount it because things seem so easy for them. I think 89 of the 91 wins have been by double digits, but things are so easy for them because of him, because of the program he's built, because of the culture he's developed, because of the way they recruit, and obviously because of the way he teaches, because that just, like, there's a reason this stuff has never been done before. It's hard to do. And so it's an amazing accomplishment, and I'm glad you brought it up because it deserves to be mentioned. What he's done there is something is unlike, I don't know that we'll ever see it again. How about that?
Yeah, I don't think that we will. And it, to me, you know, women's college basketball specifically, it kind of has like the, you know, pardon me for getting, you know, eighth grade history on you, but Pat Summitt was the Triassic period, and now Geno's the Jurassic period, so to speak. Like, there were two distinct different eras dominated in large part. You know, Pat Summitt is just everything to women's college basketball and established and legitimized that sport. And then obviously those two had a rivalry that actually, frankly, it got contentious and led to the halting of that series, unfortunately. And now, since someone has had to step away, Gino has continued to only just get even better and better, and UConn continues going forward. My real quick take is that I actually think it's good for women's basketball, because if UConn wins 30 games and loses and wins 24 games and loses, we just don't talk about them as much. So at least we're talking about them. Whenever they do lose, it will be a story. And now people will just kind of, they'll be on the radar there, and it'll be interesting for women, the women's tournament going in, because I think there will be some doubt, because this is apparently a team that's not even remotely on the same level as the team from the past 2 years. My other thing for you real quick, GP, I'm going to give a shout out to Jeff Grammer at the Albuquerque Journal, because so Colorado State and New Mexico play, and New Mexico's on some shaky ground. Craig Neal, their head coach, you know, hot seat issues, the fan base, that's an underrated passionate fan base in New Mexico. They care. That's the pro team essentially there in that area. And the Lobos have not been good enough and up to standards in recent years. So Grammer tells me that in the pregame, he without a doubt heard, he didn't hear specific words, but he knew, could tell there was some trash talk from Colorado State players to New Mexico players, New Mexico coaches, excuse me. And maybe it was going a little bit both ways. But the crazy part is, so after the game ends, so New Mexico goes on the road, beats Colorado State. Grammer wants to get more of the story, so he goes outside the arena to kind of follow up with the coaches. And by pure coincidence, first of all, this almost never happens. So the video is on the site, and you've probably seen it if you're, you know, a heavy Twitter user. But Emmanuel Mogbo, who was the player that lost his parents in a house fire almost a year ago to the day I wrote about it, he starts going after the New Mexico coaches. And the New Mexico coaches are outside their bus. They're not yet on the bus, and they're kind of just like, keep walking, learn to lose with dignity. Amagbo like wants to fight him, and Larry Eustace is holding Amagbo back, and it's half like hold me back, and half like he kind of wanted to throw down there. But the crazy thing is, we don't even know about this story if Grammer doesn't follow up and go to talk to New Mexico coaches. So he's out there with his phone, and we got it on video. It was just, I felt bringing it up on the podcast because it was such a weird event that you almost would never see, but because a reporter had the instinct to go and try and talk to the coaches, he just happened to be out there when Amagba was walking to his car outside the arena and wanted to like throw down. And by the way, Terrence Rencher, Chris Harriman, both New Mexico assistant coaches, were ejected in the game because they had left the bench during a potential scuffle, and that's against the rules, so they got booted from it. So it was just a really weird event. Neither of those teams, unless they win their tournament, conference tournament, are going, but you almost never see that happen. And the fact that it happened outside the arena and was caught on video, I just thought was notable and also pretty strange.
Yeah, I don't know what to say about this exactly, because I still don't know who was right and who was wrong. You know, if it was just right, a player losing his mind, then it was a player losing his mind, and he should be disciplined for that. On the other hand, and this is certainly the story that Larry Eustace is floating, if it's a case of an assistant coach antagonizing a student athlete, like that's ridiculous, childish, stupid. And if that's what happened here, then who was it? Terrence? Is that the one who's accused?
Yeah.
Then Terrence should
be
punished.
Terrence is in the video, and he's, you know,
he's doing nothing to defuse it. Like at the very least, he could have been
right.
He could have been like, hey, you guys play great. You know, let's not that. He was standing there antagonizing on some level. Like or at the very least, he wasn't trying to defuse it. I didn't think that was a good look for Terrence. Did you?
I don't think it was a good look. And even if this was totally, and I don't have this for sure, but even if it was Amagbo and or other Colorado State players that instigated this before the game, talking about you guys are going to lose your jobs and whatnot, which right, is also uncalled for and shouldn't happen, no matter what happens there, there is a code here, and it's why people kind of blew up at Krzyzewski last March with Dylan Brooks. If you are a coach on an opposing team, you don't go after the other players in any sort of way that's like that. If you're a player on player, it's different. You're competing. You're in college. It's much different. But when you're when you're a professional, like these are professional coaches and they're getting paid, and you're going after 19, 20, 21 year olds, that's a big no-no. The details still haven't been sorted out. The Mountain West says it's reviewing the incident, and it's just bizarre. It's different. It's not a good look for Terrence, and it's not a good look for Amagbo either. But you know, clearly Eustace and Craig Neal are in disagreement over what sparked this and what really went down and what happened. But we do have this odd video as well. So it was interesting, and it's really the first time we've had a legitimate reason to talk about the Mountain West this year, because the conference, unfortunately, GP, the conference is not good. It's probably going to be a one-bid league.
It is. It certainly looks like a one-bid league. Again, I don't know the backstory. I mean, I know what I've read, but I don't actually know, right? It certainly, the two staffs are floating different stories. They're not all in agreement here. But just simply from watching the video, I would have liked, if I were an administrator, I would have liked my assistant coach to handle it better than Terrence handled that. I don't think he might not have been the one who started it, but like, I think coaches should be held to a different standard than student athletes. And even if a student athlete is mouthing at you or had done, said something derogatory about you or your staff or your anything, the coaches have to be held to a higher standard. You can't stand there and sort of stare down, because there's a way to do, we've all been in weird situations. There's a way to diffuse that. And there's a way to sort of, you know, keep it going a little bit. And again, simply, I don't know what happened before the video or after the video, but on that video, I don't think Terrence was doing everything he could do to defuse that situation. So we'll see if the Mountain West actually speaks on it after talking to all parties, because I know as of today, that's what they were trying to do, trying to get to the bottom of exactly how that situation was created. Remember, you can subscribe to the Ion College Basketball Podcast on iTunes. That's the best way to get the latest episodes as quickly as possible. So please do that. Thank you all for listening a whole bunch. And we're going to talk to you again on Wednesday morning. Till then, take care.